You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 110 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I am delighted to be joined this evening by Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's so great to be on here.
Thank you so much for coming on. And I know we were just chatting a little bit earlier on. This is potentially one of the youngest children I think we're ever going to talk about on the podcast, because you gave birth 11 weeks ago. So
yes, almost, yeah.
So we are talking about a very, very young child here. So thank you so much for coming on, because I know presumably this time is a complete whirlwind.
Yes, it's been very crazy. When we got the diagnosis and we were at the children's hospital and everything like that, they didn't have a lot of resources. So when I went online, your podcast was one of the first that I found. And it's been so nice having the variety of ages and not only talking to parents of kids with Hirschsprungs, but also like grown adults who have Hirschsprungs and are doing great things. Because I remember when we received the kind of likelihood that this was probably Hirschsprungs, my first thought, which I think I've heard a lot of parents talk about, was what's his quality of life going to be? And I was so sad, and I was just so kind of, you know, you go down the parental rabbit hole of what's my child's life going to look like with this disease. And since, you know, finding the podcast and everything, it's been really great to see that lots of people go on to be Olympians and be able to play sports and, you know, just kind of live their life way more typically than what I first perceived it was going to be like. So I wanted to get on here too and offer some advice, or, you know, kind of experience for, you know, people who probably in this moment are working through a diagnosis of Hirschsprungs. So
absolutely. Yeah, there's an awful lot of people in the world who are doing some amazing things and have Hirschsprungs. So like, the aim really is to just show people that, you know, there's ups and downs, of course there are, but, you know, it shouldn't stop us doing whatever we want to do, you know, as you said, Olympians, you know, actors, actresses, all sorts. So plenty of things. But if we take you back to the beginning, and I know it's not that long ago, 11 weeks ago, it sounds like I'm taking you back far in time. I'm not, I'm only taking you a couple of months ago. Would you like to sort of start the story, I guess, from the beginning?
Yeah, for sure. So my pregnancy and everything was completely normal. As most people probably know, you can't necessarily pick up Hirschsprung's disease on ultrasounds and things like that. So when I went into labor spontaneously, like there was no indication that there would be anything going on, but the pregnancy was normal. The birth was really smooth and labor was smooth. I got really lucky with that. When he was born, he, you know, by all appearances looked completely fine. And then he was kind of a textbook diagnosis in the sense that he presented very normally for a Hirschsprungs. So in the first 24 hours, he hadn't had a meconium. We were feeding him breast milk and then also trying to top him up with a bit of formula. And then, you know, in a weird amount of time later, so almost an hour or two after, he would just puke all of his milk up. And at that point, it wasn't bile or anything like that, but this is my first baby as well, so I had no idea kind of what was just normal newborn stomach sorting itself out in the first 24 hours of life. So I kind of let the nurses know what was going on. They didn't seem overly concerned at the time too. So I was like, okay, I guess it's just maybe I'm feeding too much and all of that. Some of the nurses thought it may just be I was trying to feed him too much volume in that first 24 hours of life kind of thing. So for that piece. There weren't any major red flags yet, but the doctors that came in kind of sporadically were starting to realize that going that long without a meconium was, you know, potentially something unusual. So they kept an eye on him. And then going into kind of the second day postpartum, he started to get more lethargic. So just kind of sleepy, not really interested in eating. And he wasn't getting a lot of food in for kind of what they were hoping for his feeds. I had to kind of wake him up to eat and that kind of thing. Still was having these episodes of vomiting, the formula and stuff. And again, at that point, it wasn't bile. It was just like continuously anytime we tried to feed him. And then his belly started to get a little bit distended. So they sent him for an x-ray, which just showed that he had some air fluid levels or gas levels, which can indicate things aren't moving through properly. But at that point, it wasn't kind of this big concern. So they just kind of monitored him. And then later that evening, he actually did have a meconium. So we're like, okay, like it was just a slow process of getting his gut going. And then overnight, again that night, same thing, kind of puking, not really keeping his milk down, not doing well with feeding, that kind of thing. And so the next day, his belly started to get much more distended and still hadn't had any more episodes of stool. And so the doctors that were just kind of checking in on him said, okay, we're going to get the pediatrician on the unit involved because we think this is probably, you know, a little bit more concerning. They sent him for an ultrasound as well, and it still showed kind of this similar thing as the x-ray did. And so the pediatrician came in and did a full assessment. She also didn't love how his belly was looking, that he wasn't eating. And at this point, it was like later afternoon on the third day. He was born on the 29th. The second day. It's all a blur. At this point, honestly, that was like first 48 hours. Yeah, so this was the 31st and he was born on the 29th. So like going into the third day in the afternoon, they were getting more concerned. He was really sleepy at this point, like no interest in eating, all that kind of stuff. So they took him over to the NICU to just kind of monitor him and then did some more x-rays. And at that point, they put an NG tube down his nose to suck out the stuff that wasn't coming out naturally. Started him on some antibiotics, and then they were all kind of off chatting with the team at the Alberta Children's Hospital. And so they kind of came in and said, you know, they did another x-ray. The obstruction was looking progressively worse. And just in case he ends up needing surgery, he has to get transferred to the Children's Hospital. And so this was just such a blur and like stressful, obviously, situation like most people go through. I think it was Gemma on your podcast previously that talked a lot about, you know, kind of what moms and parents go through in this time. And it was everything she said I was feeling, just like the shock and the hormones and being separated from my child. It was so hard to go through all of that, but I knew he was going to, you know, the right place to be treated. And they had said to me, I was kind of like, okay, what could possibly be going on? And at that point, it was just kind of like, okay, well, it could be a meconium plug, but that's pretty rare. It could be something called Hirschsprung's disease. And I was like, oh, no, that's not it. Or it could just be some sort of like actual obstruction, like twisting of the bowel. We just don't really know yet. And so then he got transferred to Children's that night, and I was obviously like a basket case, so anxious, so stressed out. But the nurses and the team there kind of made me really, they really made it a much more calm environment. He didn't have to get rushed to have more tests overnight. They were fine with him kind of just with the NG and settling until the morning, which gave me a little bit of reassurance. But the next day they did a contrast enema, which most kids get. I'm noticing just listening to more episodes, like that's quite a common thing that people are experiencing when their little ones get diagnosed this early. So he got that, and the surgeon came in. She was super lovely and said, look, like this is probably looking like it's Hirschsprung's disease. And I was like, no way, like the super rare thing. And so far, she said it looks like it's probably short segment. So that's good news. But ultimately, we won't know exactly for sure until we do the rectal biopsy. So then, you know, rectal biopsy got done the next day. In total, we were only there for about 5 days. So pretty short stay. He improved really fast after they did his first irrigation. And I think they got about 200 mils out of his first irrigation, which was wild. Shows you how backed up he was. But then I kind of thought like, okay, so that meconium probably was just overflow coming out, like not even a true like stool that he did on his own. But yeah, so the experience in NICU was everything that Jaha talked about from a mom's perspective. It was stressful. It was very difficult trying to manage the yourself as a postpartum woman. And like, yes, access to medication for pain, like all that stuff for yourself, that was hard. But yeah, luckily he was only there for about 5 days. We started to do the irrigations. He improved and then they discharged us before the biopsy results were back. But, you know, it was very likely to be Hirschsprung's disease. So, yeah.
Wow. that's quite a that's quite a start. And I it's interesting that they mentioned it was the possibility of Hirschsprung's early on. And I know you've talked about a lot of the classic symptoms, the meconium, I know you said it wasn't bile, but there was more things sort of coming up, or certainly milk wasn't staying down. So kind of all the classic signs, but I guess like a lot of parents who don't have any Hirschsprung's in the family or have never heard of Hirschsprung's, you maybe Google it and say, oh, well, it's one in 5,000. We won't be the one, surely. We won't be the one. And well, I guess somebody has to be the one at some point. But it's, how did you feel, I guess, when, even though the odds were so small, because I'm presuming there's no sort of genetic history of Hirschsprung's in the family or anything like that.
Yeah, no. So on both mine and my husband's side, we have no history of Hirschsprung's, no kind of stories of people like passing away from stomach problems, you know, that kind of thing. So it was very new.
Yeah. So you are in kind of in my case as well. You are the one in 5,000, or Leo is the one in 5,000. How does that sort of feel that it is kind of just luck, I guess.
Yeah, like it was a huge mental thing that I had to work through, because coming up to this, like, as I said, Leo's my first child and probably will be my only child because I have two other stepsons. I had waited, you know, such a long time to like find the right person and have a baby with them. And prior to meeting my husband, I was actually doing IVF because I wanted to have a baby on my own. And then after all of this, Leo was born, and like one of my first thoughts, and I think it was also a lot of the hormones, but it was, you know, is he gonna hate me for having him because, you know, I wanted a baby so bad? Was that selfish of me to like want a child, and now my child has this disease that's gonna affect him his whole life? Like, is he gonna be mad that I made him, you know? And it was all this kind of terrible hormone thinking, and I was really, really upset about it. But that was the first day. And of course, the diagnosis too, when you have no context for what it is, like how other people are living with it, how other people are functioning, you just kind of see the AI interpretation on Google of what it is and how people live their life, which isn't reality. But and kind of, as I mentioned, like I also work in gastroenterology as a nurse practitioner. So, but I don't work with pediatrics. I work with adults, and I don't actually see a lot of adults coming in with this ever in my hospital, which I guess is a good thing. So I was also learning about this from a pediatric diagnosis perspective and trying to work through that as well, as a mom, which was really hard to do both things.
Definitely. I'm glad you mentioned that you work in gastro, because I was going to bring that up and I forgot to bring that up at the start. I wrote myself a note saying I must say that, because I think it is really, really important. That did you, because obviously your background and your training, did you have more of an understanding of what Hirschsprung's is, or is there not a lot of training on Hirschsprung's in gastro?
Radio. The station that makes you feel good. conversation that makes you feel good.
Yeah, so as a like adult trained nurse practitioner, I actually hadn't heard of Hirschsprung's disease before my son was born with it. And I, having all of the training that I have in gastroenterology, and as I said, I work in acute care, so I work in the hospital. I consult on patients around the hospital that have GI problems that their physicians are, they call our service and they say, hey, I brought this patient with, you know, XYZ, can you come, you know, see what you think or help us manage this problem, whatever. So we do that. And I've never had someone with Hirschsprung's ever, which, as I said, is probably a good thing. But it was totally new to me. And trying to, as I said, trying to balance my knowledge of GI and kind of the worst that I've seen happen with people with bowel obstructions and then just try to be his mom was very difficult. So I would say, like, even for people that have babies with Hirschsprung's that have no medical knowledge and maybe they think like, oh, if I had some knowledge, it would be helpful. It's actually not. And to in some way, it made it worse because, you know, I know like a little too much to be just kind of comfortable with the whole situation. My brain goes to the worst case scenarios of the people that I've dealt with in the hospital that have bowel obstructions and even the enterocolitis, right? Like patients that come in that have this as an adult that is not associated with Hirschsprung's. They're some of them go to ICU and, you know, they're super sick. And I just like was spiraling with all of the worst case scenarios in my head. So it was actually less helpful to have the knowledge that I do than better.
That's interesting because I just in my head, I thought it might be the other way around. But what you said there makes total sense that actually your head goes to because you've seen it. And you know the worst case scenario, your mind goes to that place, which is really, really interesting. So sometimes if you, I guess if you don't have the knowledge that you have, then it makes it a little bit easier. That's sort of like, I don't want to use the word ignorance to it, but that sort of, you know, not knowing the worst case scenario is actually a better thing. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I also found too, like, it's very hard to, like, when you're a healthcare provider, we get into, you kind of learn over time to be able to separate a little bit the person from the diagnosis so that this allows you to go into a room and meet someone and be able to look at them logically and look at their signs and symptoms and not get caught up with too much emotional things so that you don't. So that you can't think logically, right? So if you're always caught up with kind of the emotions of the situation, it's very hard to think logically and know what to do in the moment for a person. And sometimes that can be like a life or death situation. But I found as a mom, it's very hard for me, obviously, to be able to compartmentalize like I can do in the hospital for treatment. And that has had me worry about enterocolitis more times than I'd like to admit. But my husband is in engineering, so he's very logic and black and white, and he has been able to talk me down a number of times, which has been nice. But
that's really interesting because I can imagine, you know, seeing, obviously you see gastro illnesses, you know, on a daily basis, but when it's your child and they have a condition that is, you know, something that you don't see every day, barely see at all. You know, that obviously makes it really, really difficult. So you're in a quite unique spot, I guess, in the fact that you have all the knowledge and then you have the sort of personal side to it as well. And I guess, I mean, it's interesting because of what you, I guess, what you know about Hirschsprung's now, has that then helped you in your work as well?
I think it definitely will. I haven't gone back to work yet in Canada. We're very lucky. We can take a year on maternity leave, which has been really nice, like, especially with someone with this condition. But I think it will help me a lot. And it's actually kind of sparked my interest more so in this area for my own practice too. Just having kind of what can I do to involve myself in the world of Hirschsprung's disease that before I would never have had a reason to or even like kind of awareness to do that. So that's been nice. And sorry, kind of to answer one of your previous questions. It's not that I you know, the I still had to go through like, what is Hirschsprung's? What does this mean for my child and everything? The only thing that kind of having my background helped with was just, you know, I understand the anatomy of the colon. I understand, you know, the nerve endings not being there and what that all means. But ultimately, kind of as I already said, it the putting that into practical application with your child is like a whole different story.
I can imagine. I can absolutely imagine. And I know on the little bit of the chat we had before this, you know that it's short segment Hirschsprung's, but you're still awaiting the pull through. Is that right? At the end of the month?
Yeah. So he gets his pull through on the 27th. And so our surgeon kind of talked us through what that looks like and kind of the approach and everything like that. So obviously for people who've gone through this before, like it's quite a long surgery. So that's, you know, for any person, it's a long surgery. So kind of obviously any parent would be super nervous about that. So trying not to worry about it too quickly. I know it's coming up really soon, but since he's been home, he's been great. Like knock on wood, he's been doing awesome. He has had some ups and downs just with like the normal newborn stuff. So for example, changing, like getting him on a formula that would work for his gut. And there was about a week or so where he was quite, you know, gassy and upset and getting the usual digestive issues that probably every newborn would. But, you know, again, you have to layer this Hirschsprung's diagnosis on top of it and ask yourself, okay, like, this could just be a regular newborn working out a formula change, or could this be like an enterocolitis starting? He hasn't had it yet either, thank God, knock on wood, but we don't really know how he's going to present either, right? So it's like we're still hopefully, you know, in the best case scenario, he'll never experience that. But if he does, we'll have to figure out kind of what his tells are. And also being a new mom, I haven't gone through the usual turmoil with a newborn and kind of what they just generally go through. So that has also been a little bit difficult, but we've worked through those kind of the speed bumps and trying to figure out. I think the other thing too that's been a bit difficult is trying to find information on all this kind of stuff too when like you're a new mom and then a mom of a baby with Hirschsprung's. Like I'll call his clinic nurses and they have been amazing, but they don't always have the answer to every question, especially because they aren't seeing your baby in the moment. And, you know, they can only give advice on what they've experienced. And there's just not a lot of like new baby plus Hirschsprung's resources, I'd say.
No, I think there's not a massive amount of Hirschsprung's resources just because of the nature of the, you know, the condition it is. There's more than there was, but it's, I don't think it's ever going to have masses of research just because it is so rare, and you know, because the nature of how rare it is, there's not going to be that many people who have it, and then you know there's not going to be that much data on, you know, all the people that have it and all sorts. But yeah, I can imagine sort of finding info is pretty tough.
Yeah, and just like the practical questions that are tough unless you've experienced it. So for example, so Leo doesn't coop on his own at all without irrigations. He's like purely an irrigation guy. He'll sometimes fart, which we're like, yay, but he almost never does. And then also with his poops, yeah, he only poops with irrigations. There have been like one or two times that he had a shart and we like danced about that because it was something. But questions like, do bicycle exercises and tummy exercises for gas work for a baby with Hirschsprung's? Like, if they can't get the gas out, do bicycles work, right? So that question, as I said, about formula, like, you know, they're super gassy, are we just gonna have to do extra irrigations or like let some gas out? Or, you know, how long do we give a formula before we switch to something else if it's upsetting their stomach? Things like gas drops, like will gas drops work? Because certain gas drops, the whole point, like simethicone, which is one of the most, I'd say, more popular ones for gas relief in babies, and same also with like gripe water and stuff like that. It moves the gas into like a bigger bubble, hopefully so they can poop or like fart it out. But like, again, It's not going to work in a Hirschsprung's baby. We tried it with him for a couple of days, and he seemed to get more fussy with it, so we stopped. But all these things that people can just be like, oh, we don't really know. Like, you can try it kind of thing. And, you know, when you're a new mom, it's just like, well, I don't know. I don't want to try it if it's going to hurt him, you know. So those things, those very specific questions, it's like, you just gotta go try it and see what happens, which for me, who likes things black and white, has not been working very well.
That is the unfortunate thing I hear very often, that it's trial and error. You know, even when it comes to things like stoma bags and what works and what doesn't, and, you know, foods, diet, all sorts of things. The frustrating thing, I guess, is that everybody is individual, and two people who have, and we're not also talking about different types of Hirschsprungs as well, you know, long segment or short segment. You can have two people who have short segment who have, you know, quote unquote, the same diagnosis, but have entirely different symptoms and lives and all sorts. And I guess, yeah, I guess that's the real frustration.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, because then you kind of even can't take what is someone else's experience and necessarily apply it, like lay it over exactly yours, and it's going to be like that, you know. Like I've heard some other people that have been on your podcast with short segment who their children do stool in between the irrigations, right? So it's like still short segment, but for some reason Leo's is just like purely irrigation. And so yeah, it's that type of thing, right? It's such a unique place, and I think that has led to me, especially at the beginning, I felt so isolated and alone and like scared. And it's like, well, I can't even look this up because I don't get answers, you know, because it's just such a rare thing, which is difficult some days to be like, I don't know who I can ask about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I know you mentioned Gemma, who came on a few weeks ago. And brilliant episode if people haven't checked that out. If you really want to hear about like what mothers really go through in between, I guess, all of the surgeries and the irrigations and whatnot, and it sort of fills the gaps of, because we talk about a lot about procedures, and we talk a lot about, you know, this happened and this happened and this happened, but those gaps in between, those sort of long waits, either whether it be through surgery or sort of before and after, I would imagine those bits are pretty tricky.
Yeah, I think like when, I think she kind of talked about this too, when you get discharged and the nurses are kind of confident that you can do an irrigation. And I remember just feeling very not confident about it. And my, thank God my partner, like he's been so amazing, but he has been able to figure out Leo's kind of angles for his rectum and everything. So he actually, for the most part, has been doing most of his irrigations, and I hold his legs apart and kind of, I'm the belly massager and he's the irrigator. But it's just things like that, like who's going to end up doing what and how is it going to work in our house, and the in-between, as you said, of hearing from people. There's about a week or two in between when the nurses did a follow-up for us after we went home. And, you know, that whole time I'm trying to breastfeed and that's not really going well because my body was not happy that it was away from him the first couple days in NICU. So I wasn't really producing as much breast milk. And so then when we were trying to also top up with formula and then pump, and it was just, you know, it was so stressful and really scary. And then of all the people in my mom group who you would normally reach out to and say like, hey, you know, my baby's doing this, is this normal kind of thing? It doesn't apply because Leo is Hirschsprung's. I can't text someone and be like, hey, was your baby like this? Like, you know, get some reassurance from that side of things. So I related to a lot of what she had to say, and I just felt it was so important to talk about too, what we go through as mothers and fathers being postpartum. You know, the separation, I had a really hard time with that the first couple nights he was away, because your body, you just have a baby, you're not meant to be separated from them right away. That was super hard. You know, the guilt and fear and everything that goes into all of that. And yeah, the in-between of waiting for appointments, waiting for updates on their condition, you know, kind of always having that fear in your back pocket. Like, is this an enterocolitis episode starting? And what do I do about that? And having to wait for the nurses to call us back to kind of talk through what he's going through that day. He had a couple days where I did have to call them and kind of make sure it wasn't the start of an enterocolitis. And thank God it wasn't. But, you know, waiting, you know, 5 or 6 hours till they get to the end of their day so they can call us back, that type of thing. So that was hard. But, you know, I can say now that we're in a little bit of a flow, I guess, with our day. And if you'd have asked me in that moment at the start, like, would I ever be at a place where this felt like a normal everyday thing, I would have been like, this is never going to feel that way. And, you know, my world was just turned upside down. And it does get better. It does. And you start to find, you know, things throughout your day that give you happiness, and also that allow you to kind of function as normally as you can with a newborn.
That's really, really good to hear. It's really, really good that sort of, because again, I can only imagine, you know, if we rewind the clock back 12 weeks, you know, to think of all of the things that you have to learn that you never thought in a million years you would have to learn. I mean, irrigations, the word Hirschsprungs, you know, everything that goes with that, ganglion cells, all the procedures, the surgeries, the appointments, all of that stuff that 12 weeks ago you'd have never even imagined. And then you have no choice. You have to learn it all. Like there is no like, oh, well, I'll learn it, you know, another time. You've got no choice. You have to learn it. And it staggers me really how people can fit all of that in and all of that information, and alongside all of the anxiety and the worry and the, you know, like you said, with, you know, thinking, right, is enterocolitis on the way and this, that, the other, and you're looking for signs for that, but you're also thinking about irrigations and you're thinking about all sorts of things. Like, I'm just absolutely staggered how people can do that. I don't get how people can figure all that stuff out, but I guess you just have to, don't you?
Yeah, you just do it and it becomes a part of your life. And it just, I think, kind of is an attestation to people's strength and everything to be able to get this thrown at them and then still be able to kind of find a way to live and learn all the things you have to learn and all that kind of stuff. And still, yeah, be able to kind of look forward to, you know, just living life and not letting this situation or this kind of diagnosis be your entire world, like it is for most things. But it's difficult, but as you said, you just kind of, you have to, you don't have another choice. And yeah, just kind of the hurdles that you don't see coming. Like a few days ago, I was at soccer practice with one of my stepsons and my partner was home with Leo. And we've been trying, obviously, to keep him at home as much as we can just until his surgery and everything. We don't want to get him sick and stuff beforehand. But he had eaten so much that day. He was super hungry and then was super full right at the time of soccer practice, and he was just not a happy camper. So my partner had to like go do the irrigation by himself, and it obviously was very difficult, but he got it done. And so it's things like that you don't anticipate having to kind of drop everything and go do in case there's an emergency, and trying to explain to people like, yeah, I can't come to this thing, or I can't go for dinner or these things right now because, you know, my son needs his irrigation like at 7 p.m. or 8 p.m., right? So it's that kind of stuff. And also trying to educate your friends and family about what's going on and kind of the seriousness of the disease and what it means for your everyday life. The other day, he just got over his 2-month vaccination schedule. So I'm at the public health office and she's going over the vaccines, and there's one here, I don't know if you guys have it, but it's for rotavirus. I think it's new. It's like a stomach bug kind of thing. And so the medication is a vaccine that is live, I believe, and also excreted through the stool. So it's actually contagious. So they say, you know, make sure you guys wash your hands and be really careful when you're doing his irrigations or diaper changes because it's contagious through the stool. But I'm sitting there like, okay, this is a vaccine that gets excreted through the poop. He doesn't poop. He only gets irrigated twice a day. I'm like, is this safe to give a GI baby, like a Hirschsprung's baby? So then the clinic nurse was like, okay, well, why don't you try to get in touch with the GI clinic and see if we can figure that out. But it's all these things you don't anticipate. And, you know, I had to talk through it with his surgeon. I had to page her at the hospital. And she said, you know, I don't actually know the answer to that. That's a really good question. But she's like, it sounds like we probably don't want to give it and wait till after his surgery because, you know, God forbid it kicks off an enterocolitis, that kind of thing. It's like, what about that? So, yeah, I think there's always going to be those moments, but you just do the best you can.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's good in a way that they've said, well, I don't know, rather than just trying to fob you off with an answer or say, oh, yeah, it's fine, you know, yeah, or whatever. At least they're honest and say, actually, we've never come across this before. And actually, we don't know. Which I think.
Yeah, it was nice for us to kind of like talk through it together. But yeah, as a parent, you hope, I think you always think there's going to be someone that knows all the answers. And what I've realized now that I'm a mom is that's more so not the case than is the case. And I don't like that.
Oh, no, you don't want to have to.
I guess that's life.
Yeah, you don't want to have to go through all of the things of being a mom, first time mom. And then you have to be the doctor as well. And you have to be, you know, because I see this so often with people who, yes, the doctors will say, do X, Y, Z, whatever. But then you then have to do your own research on top of that and then go, okay. And also, a lot of Hirschsprung's is in possiblys and maybes. And rather than do this, do that, do the other, because everybody's so different.
I guess
that's a really tough one.
Yeah, the gray area when it's your kid is tough, I think, definitely. But, you know, over the last couple months, the few silver linings that we've had, which I had to try to find some, were that, you know, we didn't have to change a poopy diaper yet. So that's been great. He's been sleeping well. He absolutely loves his irrigations. He's so excited for twice a day. I always joke, like, he's going to be so disappointed to figure out that, like, he actually has to poop and he's going to be pooping his pants and having lots of poopy diapers. He's not going to be a fan of that. And, you know, when we did his circumcision, like, it healed really nicely because there was no poop. Like, so there's been a few things that were like, okay, yeah, we haven't had to deal with the poopy stuff just yet, but I know that's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know that there are plus sides in the first few months of Hirschsprung's, because
right,
everyone
like
talks about
the linings.
Yeah, everyone talks about all of the stuff that's not so great, but there are, you know, it's nice to know that there's a couple of things here and there. There was one point that you made a few moments ago when you said you celebrate him farting, and only Hirschsprung's parents know that. There will be people listening to this going, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But if you told anybody else that, they wouldn't have a clue.
Right. And the thing is, like, we don't know why some days he farts and other days he doesn't. It must just be pressure related. But yeah, when he does, I always do a little dance. And as I said, the first couple times at home where he had like a little shart come out, it was like, oh, like, good job, buddy. So, yeah, that's a very unique thing, obviously, to Hirschsprung parents to, you know, celebrate when your baby has a poop or a fart.
Yeah, that only Hirschsprung's parents will know that. No, nobody else. Nobody else will have a clue. Only Hirschsprung's parents will know.
Yeah.
So I guess we talked a little bit about surgery coming up on the 27th Jan. But I guess sort of in the meantime and sort of post that, what are your kind of hopes for the future for Leo?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I heard you ask this previously, I got emotional because it's such a, oh, it's like a huge thing to, obviously every mom wants their baby to like thrive and be happy. And I do want him to find someone who completely understands his condition and whatever it looks like when he's an adult, you know, and is able to kind of accept him for that. And I hope he's able to realize that he's got this disease and do things in spite of the disease, not because of it, if that makes sense. Like, do this, you know, I'm going to do this in spite of my Hirschsprung's because I know I can. And obviously now, because he hasn't had his pull through yet and we don't know what the post is going to look like, it's hard for me to kind of say, you know, it'll be this type of path for him going forward. But I just want him to know that he doesn't need to be defined by his Hirschsprung's, and hopefully it just becomes background noise with, you know, every so often, maybe the stereo will turn up the volume a little bit, but hopefully we can turn it right back down and he can just kind of go on happy. His two stepbrothers, which we just call them full brothers, like they're just like their full brothers. They're so good with him and they're so excited for him. And we've been kind of trying to teach them about Hirschsprung's a little bit and kind of they're almost 8 and 5. So obviously their grasp is going to be a bit limited. They just know that, you know, he's got a tummy disease and he needs to have, you know, his poop irrigated twice a day. And as they get older, they'll be able to learn more about it. But he's got a great support network. And my parents are luckily here in the city, so they've been really, really great as well. And I just hope he, grows up to just have Hirschsprung's be not define him.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic because I think, as I've talked to many people, have achieved so much, you know, having Hirschsprung's, and it is, like you said, just background noise to them. You know, they have it, they've been through a lot, but actually they go on, they do amazing things, and hopefully, you know, Leo will do exactly the same.
Yes, that's what we're hoping. I think, you know, for parents who maybe just navigating a new diagnosis, or even those who have maybe had a diagnosis for a while, the thing that helped me the most, I think, too, just from a parental perspective, is the reaching out to other people or finding the support groups or the podcast. Because otherwise, yeah, as I said previously, it can be such a lonely place. And if there are ways that can be alleviated for anyone else in the future that's going to go through that, like, I just want to say, kind of making those little connections. It doesn't have to be a lot. It doesn't have to be necessarily even reaching out to someone on Facebook, but I've just found by joining, like following Reach on Facebook and following Pull Through Network, and then of course your podcast, it gave me enough of a connection that even just reading people's posts, I felt like I was in the world of people who understood the diagnosis. Even if it wasn't that I had to kind of reach out or post something, I just had kind of, it felt like I had a support network of people that understood without having to, you know, track them down in person, because that's impossible when with a 1 in 5,000 diagnosis. So yeah, the support network has been amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think the support networks, Facebook groups are really, really important. And they, as you said, trying to find people who understand what a ganglion cell is and understand what, you know, what even the word Hirschsprung's means, even if they, you know, don't quite understand the ins and the outs. I think that's incredibly important. But thank you so, so much for coming on. I know this episode will really help a lot of people who are going through those sort of very, very early stages. And like I said before, wish you, Leo, and your whole family all the very, very best for the future.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it. And yeah, if anyone wants to reach out on Facebook, I'm happy to chat, especially new people. So
fantastic. Thank you ever so much.
Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.